Trust. That's like a community-owned land. There were housing cooperatives, like 30-something different housing cooperatives in this. It's called Milton Park. It's the largest community land trust in North America. And with people there, I had, like, the 2 days before the campfire, had just put on a conference at the University of Quebec there on community control of land and housing. That's how I ended up coming back to Chico, looking at, seeing the campfire happening. I was just sitting, refreshing the screen, seeing the boundary of the fire. And what I saw was the fire was at East 20th Street. And so my family house is in Doe Mill. And, like, those, any possessions I had were all there. And it looked to me like the fire was going straight there. I know now that that was a back burn on the Valley's Edge and Stonegate properties, that actually met up with the campfire coming down. And they did that to defend Chico. But then I just felt like frantic and helpless, and seeing as I was, you know, being a part of a progressive movement in a city with a really well-established, like grassroots political institutions, I thought I should come back to Chico, and I had sort of a premonition of how bad things would get seeing the severity of it. I mean, the whole town of Paradise being gone, and I wasn't wrong really. You know, I got back in the spring following, and there was a mass wave of evictions. I talked to people, I canvassed, I spoke to people in front of grocery stores and at farmers market, and it was worse than I think anybody realized. Certainly, anything that's documented, the amount of people that were experiencing housing insecurity were being threatened with eviction and giving maximum rent increases. There has been a lot of price gouging in Chico, in Butte County, and just the general sense of insecurity, people that were afraid of losing their place or did lose their place and were unable to relocate somewhere because the standards for being a tenant in Chico just flew off the charts. You know, there are these very asymmetric and unequal relations between landlords and tenants. And when something like a disaster happens, it is a boon and a windfall for the owners of property. But the rest of us are stuck just to deal with the situation of enhanced scarcity where we have to compete with one another more to have the best credit and have the, you know, three times the rent income, or more realistically, because nobody has that, is you have to have a cosigner. So it becomes a situation of even being a tenant in Chico is like a factor of inherited wealth where your parents must be, or some family of yours has to be wealthy enough in order to cosign for you, so that you can even get a rental.
So Addison Winslow, you mentioned that you came back from Montreal, right, in response to the campfire, Paradise and Chico, your hometowns, and you made the comment about there's enhanced security around housing, which many folks forget that about a month before the campfire actually happened, the city of Chico had declared this housing crisis. And so it is this enhanced scarcity in that we already had a crisis, then the campfire hit. So you came back to Chico. Talk about what you did as you kind of made your way back into the local community. What did you learn? And then at one point, did you say, it's time for me to run for public office? And feeling like you can assist your community in its recovery by actually being an elected official?
Yeah, I didn't consider running for public office. It was a surprise to me more recently, going back like less than a year ago, when I started hearing that that people, previous elected officials, actually liked me and thought I was cool. I didn't start like showing up in Chico politics, writing letters or you know, community organizing or talking at city council meetings to be liked. I was showing up as like the rage of tenants thrown under the bus in the aftermath of a disaster. It turns out, I guess a lot of people like thought that was cool. Even when I was criticizing the Liberal city council because they were not taking action to mitigate the mass wave of evictions that took place after the campfire. But I received like good feedback on, I guess my interactions within politics. And while I've done, you know, you talked about how many times I've been on your show talking about lots of different activities, mutual aid during the pandemic and, housing advocacy more recently. And, I've kind of become somewhat of a local historian in 20th century history of like suburban sprawl. And all of that is really fulfilling for me because I care about this community and I like to have a place in it and be able to interact. I like to have one-on-ones and relationships with people all over, and have downtown as my living room. I got to a point people asking me to run for city council, and it's clear in this environment, because of the harassment, the smearing, and the very legitimate fears of personal security that come with being present in politics. You know, the right wing locally has created this whole category of enabler that is a way to not just demonize the people on the street and try to associate criminal activity with everybody who is so poor as to not afford a house, but now taking people who are showing up in solidarity with those people and then considering them also like bad for society, you know? And I've gotten that, and there's been little smear attempts on me. I feel like they haven't stuck very well. So I felt a little bit better, doing it, but it seems like I'm surprised because District 4 is the avenues. I can walk down a block and find multiple ex-mayors, in certain parts. There are a lot of very active members of the community, but it seems like there people didn't really want to run for office because they're, it feels like it would take a lot out of you, if not lead to your demise. And I feel that too. And I share those concerns, but I guess I was talked into it at a certain point.
Yeah. It's a nasty time in politics. It's very nasty. And, the political rhetoric at the national level is encouraging civil war, and not to, not to be dramatic here, but at what point did you say, I got to run? And so that leads into the question of Addison Winslow, why are you running for office? But before you answer that, I want to mention, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. We are talking with some of the Chico City Council candidates running for office this for this election cycle. Addison Winslow is running for District 4 here in Chico, which runs along... it runs between Highway 99 and Esplanade. It ends at the north at Lassen and ends in the south at 9th Street, and it includes a bunch of the university housing areas. So, Addison Winslow, why are you running for Chico City Council?
I have an interest in a lot of things in urban placemaking. I really like to spend my time in open in the community. You know, like I say, downtown's like my living room, and I appreciate the neighborhood places. And there's a lot of things that really interest me about it, and that I'm like intellectually naturally drawn to these sort of activities. I have a high tolerance for long meetings. So those are the things that I guess make it acceptable for me to where I can imagine myself in the position. And don't see it as necessarily a painful experience that I would only have to endure. Although I can definitely imagine seeing Alex Brown up there, that it could be a painful experience that I would just have to endure. What really motivates me, what motivated me and gave me the energy to spend years proactively engaged in local politics with very few breaks, is not just the broader community around, talking to the abstract. I went and talked to people at Farmers Market, and that does affect me, but it's my family and my friends that have really gotten the brunt, just like a lot of other people, of the crisis, and particularly in the aftermath of the campfire, but it's really something ongoing. I have a lot of people reach out to me because of my experience with tenant organizing, and they ask me to kind of consult on issues with their landlord. Just this week, my brother, who has a one-year-old daughter, hit me up and asked me. He just moved out of his place into a different place, and he certainly has plenty to worry about, but his landlords are trying to steal his security deposit. They charged him an illegal amount for his security deposit in the first place, 2.5 times a month's rent. You can only charge 2 months' rent. And then they're trying to say that there was a bend on some piece of metal on a heater grate, and that he's going to lose $600 as a result. Also this week, my grandmother, who lives in a mobile home, one of the senior only mobile home parks on the north side of town, she asked me if I could help her find a job because she has these little things she said irks her in the house, things that need to be fixed or improved, you know, and a lot of it's like cosmetic. And she says that my dad and my brother don't have time. By proxy, I also know she means me because I do property maintenance. I don't have time to do these things. And she wants to be able to pay to have these things fixed. She got a rent raise last year. And I know that at the county level, that the Property Owners Association, and now with a group of owners of mobile home parks, they're pushing the county to ask the state to not extend price gouging prohibition any further so that these landlords are able to raise rents with little or no restraints. So she's going to get more rent raises next year. So she's 82 years old, and she's telling me that she wants to step out of retirement and get a part-time job so she can afford the maintenance on her house. While meanwhile, the owners of this park, which they own stuff in like Florida and probably other places, they're fighting for like the legal ability to gouge her even further. So even as she steps out of retirement, and is a greeter at Walmart or something, that they can take more of that. And they aren't even responsible for maintaining her house. That's what she's doing it for. There's going to be more disasters like the campfire. Like if there's one thing sure, like climate change is going to make these things worse. It's happening faster than we anticipated. And we can't let these disasters unfold the way that the campfire and the North Complex fires and the Dixie fire have unfolded here, where the entire brunt, that the pain of the disaster just falls upon the most poor and powerless people. I won't stand for it.
Addison Winslow, candidate for Chico City Council District 4. So you've talked about, you returned to your hometown in response to the campfire, and you're talking to your grandmother, and the idea of price gouging laws that may be lifted, anti-price gouging ordinances that may be lifted, and all of the pain and suffering that is resulting from this lack of affordable housing, and you talk about climate change and so on. What is the vision that you have for Chico?
That's where I enjoy a lot more the conversation to get to different mode of thinking, because what I've come to learn about urban spaces, and this has been through a time traveling where I used to, whenever I get to a city, I would look up coffee on Google Maps, and I'd see like the highest concentration of that, and I'd go right there. And it turns out that would take me to downtowns, or it would take me to these walkable mixed-use neighborhoods. Oftentimes what are like gentrifying places. The reason they're gentrifying is because they're in high demand. The reason that's important is that those are nice spaces, right? This is the stuff that people love. People want to live in places like that where they can walk to little corner cafes or grocery stores and have their own neighborhood restaurants and spaces. Getting that requires that you have enough people sharing enough space. Like the way that Chico is built, the way that Chico was built after 1945, roughly, suburban sprawl where people would be dependent on cars and commuting into town. There's very little infrastructure put in. There's very little design consideration for people walking. It makes a city that's so inefficient that we end up with these problems. We can't even maintain our roads and sewers. And so when we talk about solving our housing crisis, and we recognize that affordable housing is going to take money from the public in order to get started, at least, we have to like confront these budgetary issues. But the way that you build a more like financially sustainable city is also how you build nice places. It also requires that the kind of housing that you have coming in is smaller, more compact. And it's places that it's lower cost. It's more affordable, really. So I think that, broadly speaking, and we can get into a lot of like fine details, and, certainly what I was just talking about would lead me to talk about tenant protections. And there's a lot that needs to be done on that front. But it's just building a city that's better for people to spend time outside and to walk outside of their cars, too. That means that the new housing is going to be smaller and more efficient. A lot of times this takes the form of having one house and having it split up into multiple different houses like we see in South Campus or the Avenues. But what we've done in Chico over the past, 40 years, is we've tried to restrict change like that happening in neighborhoods because people were afraid of, new rentals coming in with students. That's been a consistent citation. Or you talk about loss of historic character, but the loss of neighborhood character. But we're looking towards like a deterioration of our infrastructure, and we're not housing enough people. So I think overall, like the direction and what a city council should be bringing forward is a vision, putting in place the policies that will realize the goals that we have outlined in our general plan. With this long community-driven process of outlining these goals, people do want walkable, mixed-use centers for every neighborhood. That's been in our plan since right. the 90s. But we really haven't been able to realize it because there are these other considerations at play. And all of those, they're really like anti-housing. We don't want to see houses split up into multiple smaller units, but that's exactly what we need, is more people sharing the space that we have, allowing more people to. And creating spaces, you know, ideally a place where my grandma can live that's not in the back of a mobile home park with no sidewalks, no trees, certainly no bus within like 25 minutes of her 82-year-old legs walking. we really don't have those things in Chico. So people buy single family houses on the edge of town because there are so few other options. The Avenues is where a lot of low-income people live, like I do. I live in a house it's one lot with three units on it, but it's zoned low density, so you couldn't actually do that again. But so there's a lot of low-income people living here, but it's also a highly desirable neighborhood. And we haven't been able to meet that demand, even though we got the largest employers in the county here, the Enloe hospitals, like the Chico State University, proximity to downtown, makes this like a prime place to live. But we've been restricting growth in this area on the Esplanade, where our buses go by. And it's undermined the goals that we've set for ourselves as a community. And it's also undermined our ability to address the housing crisis overall. And it has left people thrown under the bus. The bus that comes once an hour. Sorry.
So let me jump in here and say, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Addison Winslow on the phone here with me. Addison is running for Chico City Council to represent District 4. So, Addison, you sort of laid out that vision for what you think Chico could be. And in a lot of ways, well, in every way, you're talking about more density, you're talking about more services, walkable, bikeable areas that could address the housing shortage, the affordable housing shortage, but it would also address climate. I mean, it would reduce Chico's contribution to climate change. But if you are elected to the Chico City Council, what are the actual mechanisms? What is the policy or the rezoning, or, you know, what would you have to do as a city council member that would allow our city to start developing in ways that you envision?
Generally, there's two sides. There's like the regulation side of what does the city say about private development that goes on, and then there's a side of what is the city doing themselves about it. Currently, the city, through zoning, through off-street parking minimums, that's a really big one for development happening or not happening. We make it difficult to build in the compact, the core of the city. And we make it easier to build suburban sprawl, which tends to be larger houses, more spread out, requires more infrastructure, takes up more habitat, and certainly imposes more costs on the city and drives more auto dependence. We're taking grant funds and we're widening Cohasset Road out to the airport. We're widening Bruce Road, going by Stonegate and Valley's Edge. We're building a Southgate freeway interchange on the southeast end of town, the south entrance of the 99, because there are also big development plans out there. So we have all of this, it's like mechanism of the state, of federal and state finance and the city going into subsidizing suburban sprawl. And we need to stop that and turn it completely inwards. You know, if we have a road improvement project, we have $22 million to make a road nice, we shouldn't be widening a road at the end of town. We should be taking a road like Mangrove and making it a nice place to be. Because that's what the neighborhood really needs. That's what would incentivize people to stop driving everywhere or you know, take the opportunity to bike and walk. Would we make it safe to bike on Mangrove, put some trees out there. We could even have like a bus rapid transit in the middle, and eventually maybe the parking lots out by Kmart and the North Valley Plaza we'll be turning to high density housing, and we'll have a connection between downtown and there. That's the kind of like plans that we should be making when we have these like tens of millions of dollars in government grant funding. That's what we should be looking towards, is making the core of our city, where most working class people live, where people are able to walk and bike, and we're able to drive the kind of climate friendly lifestyle that we want to see. Those are where our improvements should be made at. So we need to change the zoning for the center of the city, reduce or eliminate parking minimums, off-street parking minimums, so that we don't have to mandate that before housing you have pavement for cars to station themselves on. People can figure that out in another way. On the side of what the city should do proactively, I believe in social housing. That would be like public housing, but it can be nonprofit, cooperative, community-owned. There should be self-management by tenants, and rents should cover the cost of it. It shouldn't be something that comes out of tax revenue perpetually. Just like when a market rate development is made, they take a loan from a bank. It's very rarely is it financed by the developer themselves, and they pay that off through rents over time. And we can do the same thing, but not with the goal of generating money for a private developer, but for the goal of having that housing there and how that housing interacts with the community around it, making sure that it's designed in such a way that you have like eyes on the street, so the streets are safer for people to walk at night. You have it close to services, so that like my little grocery store, Warner Street Market over here, could have a bunch of housing next to it, and then more people would be shopping at Warner Street Market, so they would be able to offer more things, you know, like produce and stuff that I would like to have close to my house. And the city really can promote those sort of things. In California, we have a lot of barriers to publicly financed housing, but they are surmountable. And what the city has done historically is very close to some of those things. Like, for example, Creekside Place is this three-story senior-only low-income housing project on Little Chico Creek by Marsh Junior High School. It's built by CHIP, that's Community Home Housing Improvement Program, was once Chico Housing Improvement Program. They're now the largest nonprofit developer in the North State. They were founded as a collaboration between the city government of Chico and Chico State University. So we created the largest nonprofit developer that we have. It doesn't mean that the city's directly doing it, but the city did like set them up, you know. The land that Creekside Place is being built on was city land. The city rezoned it high density and allowed them to build that there. And that also is the way that it's designed. Look at the way you have these three stories with all these windows facing down on the creek, and there's going to be a path, just like there was before, going along Little Chico Creek. So now you have all of these people in their windows that are able to see what's going on out there. So people walking there feel safer than they did before. So that's an excellent example of how the city has in the past and even like currently like proactively supported the production of affordable housing. There is a line that comes from the city government that they say I've had multiple former mayors have said it. It seems like something just in the neoliberal establishment goes around, that the city is not in the business of housing. Historically, it's false. On sort of a normative or like what should we do or what ought to be level, it's wrong. Housing is probably the greatest like crisis we face, because it's an intersection of these like social justice issues about economic development and having a workforce that can live here, and climate change. And the city absolutely should be engaged in addressing that crisis.
Addison Winslow, candidate for Chico City Council to represent District 4. Where can people learn more about your views and your campaign?
If you're interested, and I hope you are, I need support going through this. This is totally a grassroots campaign. I'm not coming in with a lot of financial support. I got a great little team of volunteers, but we could always use help. You can, best place is the website, www.addisonforchico.org, addisonforchico.org. On there, you can also find a link to the Facebook page and the Instagram, and all of our social media is called the same thing. It's Addison for Chico. So you just Google that or look it up. You'll find it. If you're on one of those social media platforms, that's where you'll see the most stuff. We started putting up TikToks, and then I was really surprised. Like 500 people saw the first TikTok we put out, and I didn't even realize people would see TikToks in this area, little videos.
I have wasted so many hours watching TikTok. So I say to any candidate, get on TikTok.
Did you see it?
I have not, but I will go to it after this program because I love TikTok.
Okay,
yeah,
good,
it is a complete waste of time, but it is a lot of fun. And if you use it well.
Yeah, I mean, I have like the educational urban planning videos on my TikTok. So I'd recommend getting into those. And I'd like to make more of those. I mean, the whole local history plus urban planning makes like the whole city is just this like arena for like educational, interesting videos about like things and history and design and how to make the city a better place. So I'd like to do some of that.
Addison Winslow, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. And we will follow your campaign through the election, as well as all of the other candidates that are running for the Chico City Council, as well as State Assembly, State Senate, as well as congressional candidates that would be representing Butte County. Addison, thanks so much for your time.
That was Addison Winslow, candidate running to represent the 4th District on the Chico City Council. When we come back, you'll hear Sue's interview with Chico City Council candidate Morgan Kennedy, who is running to represent Chico's District 2. And to the caller who called in to point out that I was playing the incorrect interview, thank you very much for catching me and contributing to the overall quality of the show. We do appreciate it. We'll be back right after this.
Sun's setting fast, and just like they say, nothing good ever lasts. We'll go on now and kiss it goodbye, but hold on to your lover, 'cause your heart's bound to die. Go on now and say goodbye to our town, to our town. Can't you see the sun setting down? That's where I met my baby on one hot summer night. He was the tender and the order to bear. It's been 40 years and I'm still sitting here. But you know the sun's setting fast, and just like they say, nothing could ever last. Go on now and kiss it goodbye, but hold on to your love, 'cause your heart's bound. Goodbye, but hold on to your love, 'cause your heart's bound to die. clouds fly, but I can't see too good. I've got tears in my eyes. I'm leaving tomorrow, but I don't want to go. I love you, my town. You'll always live in my soul. But I can see the sun setting fast, and just like they say, nothing good ever lasts. Go on, I gotta kiss you goodbye, but I hold you, my lover, 'cause my heart's bound to die. Go on now and say goodbye to my town, to my town. I can see the sun has gone down on my town, on my
We are back. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio, based in Chico, California. My name is Kevin Cook, sitting in for Sue Hildebrand. We continue our election season coverage, focusing on the Chico City Council races, and we turn now to one of the candidates running to represent Chico's District 2. District 2 lies in the northern part of the city, with the district running along the east side of Highway 99, with the southern border being Bidwell Park and running to the northern city limits. It's a very gerrymandered district, so it is a bit difficult to describe. Running to represent Chico's District 2 on the Chico City Council is Morgan Kennedy. Sue spoke with Morgan Kennedy this morning about why she is running for the Chico City Council.
Issue, Morgan Kennedy.
Thanks for having me, Sue.
Morgan Kennedy, you have been on this program several times before as an issue-based media representative, but this is the first time as a candidate. You're running for the Chico City Council to represent the northern part of Chico, District 2. So this is the first time I want to give you the opportunity for you to give us an introduction to who is Morgan Kennedy and ultimately what led you to decide to run for the city council.
So I am a lifelong Butte County resident. I was born in Chico, raised on the Ridge in Paradise, and then moved back down to Chico as a young adult. And I've been here since. I have, as you know, been very involved in local politics for the past several years. Helping out with things like referendums and recalls and local community organizing. Personally, I have an employment background in social services and reproductive health. More specifically, I worked for Planned Parenthood for a period of time. I have been married for close to 10 years to my husband, Billy, and we have one biological daughter, and then we are also foster parents for the last four-ish years. So we've had the opportunity to care for many wonderful children in our community while they were in need. Let's see, when it comes to kind of sillier hobbies, I guess, I'm definitely a bit of a policy nerd. I really enjoy the arts, whether it is, you know, traditional kind of paintings or music. And I also rescue feral cats, since my neighborhood has quite an issue with an overpopulation of feral cats. And I would say that I am running for city council because of a very personal reason, I guess. As I mentioned, I have experience working with Planned Parenthood. Women's equality and women's rights have always been a very important issue for me. And the day that Roe v. Wade was overturned in our country was a very sad day for me. And it was a very sad day for most of the women that I know. And I decided that day to have some friends over so we could all just kind of commiserate in person. And we were sitting in my backyard, just kind of talking about the state of things. And I looked over and I saw my young daughter playing in the backyard while we were back there. And I just knew in that instant that I had to do something radical in this moment. I really believe the only way that we're going to be able to save our democracy and have a bright future for everybody is if we elect progressive, modern politicians on local and national levels. And I wanted to be a part of that.
Morgan Kennedy, I do want to circle back, not quite yet, but I'll circle back in towards the end of this conversation. You mentioned that you're a policy nerd and that one of the reasons that you were motivated to actually throw your hat in the ring and run for city council is the overturning of Roe v. Wade. But of course, as a policy nerd, you know that you won't be making decisions at that level. But I want to keep going where our conversation is taking us at the moment, but come back to that. So, Morgan Kennedy, you said you looked at your daughter and you said, I've got to get involved. What is the vision that you have for Chico as we move forward, keeping in mind, of course, that you're looking at your daughter saying, I have to take this next step? What's your vision for Chico?
My vision for Chico is one that is a different direction than what I've seen us going in the last 5 years. I believe that Chico is a really special place. There is a reason people move here from the Bay Area and all over. There is a reason why even me growing up locally, I knew from a very young age that I wanted to establish my life in Chico. We have a really wonderful college. We have a beautiful downtown. We have kind of an eclectic flair. We have something for everybody, or at least we had something for everybody. I've also, been able to make friends that are like family here. When my husband and I were ready to buy a home, we were super able to do so. This is back in 2012. And over the last 5 years, I really see those opportunities and that uniqueness that Chico has shrinking. I really see kind of homogenized housing that's very expensive being prioritized, that is unaffordable for most of our residents. I see our arts not being focused on. I see our city being built in a way that's unfriendly for pedestrians and cyclists. I don't feel like Chico is growing in a way that is going to keep that specialness that we have. I want to see us become a modern beacon for the rest of the North State of what a beautiful, successful city can look like. More bike focused transportation would be great. A better public transit system would be amazing. And really, a big thing for me too is innovating our green spaces and our public spaces. Myself in particular, I live very close to Lindo Channel. Lindo Channel is a beautiful space that is treated like a park by many of the residents over here on the north side of town. However, it is not maintained by the city. So there's a lot of issues that come with that. Trash and debris, which are currently removed by volunteers, overgrown pathways that are really difficult for pedestrians and cyclists to use. And then my biggest issue with it is that it creates a fire hazard. Lindo Channel is surrounded by homes and apartments. A lot of the homes and apartments that are surrounding Lindo Channel are occupied by seniors who would need assistance if there was some sort of fire that got out of control. I really think that we could turn something like Lindo Channel and along with the other green spaces in Chico into something really beautiful and special where basically every single neighborhood in Chico would have a really modern, maintained area of green space that the residents could enjoy.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I am talking with Morgan Kennedy, who is running to represent District 2 on the Chico City Council. District 2 is the northern part of Chico, the most northern part of Chico, and it runs down Highway 99 on the right side. It's right through the center of Chico, a very odd shaped district. So Morgan Kennedy, I do want to circle back a little bit, because you mentioned in the beginning that what sort of forced you to say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to run for office, because quite frankly, you're a very busy person in your life, busy parent, family person. You're also very involved in a lot of issues, political issues, but you decided that you would jump in and say, I'm going to take this next step in response to Roe v. Wade. Even if you get on the Chico City Council, of course, you're not going to make those kinds of decisions, and we all know that. But I want to ask you, you laid out your vision for Chico on City Council. What specifically, what would be those policy changes that you think need to happen? What are some of the issues that you would focus on as an elected official in the city of Chico?
As an elected official, I totally understand that maybe my national issue motivations are not going to be something I have control of. However, I am a true believer that progress starts from the bottom and works its way up. You know, we can't, even if we're, you know, have a nation that's making healthy political decisions, if we have local issues that are just, you know, grossly underrepresented, then that affects individual quality of life. We have to have both for sure. And something that I would really focus on, number one, is just the bringing back of common sense. We have wasted millions of dollars in civil rights lawsuits over the last 4 years with this current city council. And I don't know about you, but I know a lot of other people, and myself included, have been sitting around going, so we spent millions of dollars in federal court, but I'm looking out my window and my road's falling apart. Or, you know, my kid's school doesn't have a good crosswalk. Or, you know, we have trash and debris that needs to be removed from Lindo Channel or from Upper Bidwell or from Lower Bidwell. To me, that is absolutely egregious that this current city council just thinks that they can stomp all over people's civil liberties, treat people inhumanely, and, you know, I mean, the literal definition of cruel and unusual punishment, and they can just get away with it and waste all of our tax dollars and think that nobody's going to notice and that nobody's going to say something about it. So really, for me, it's about examining the budget, not wasting money on lawsuits, and finding out how we can utilize what we have to benefit our community, and not just the select few at the top are the ones getting the benefit anymore.
And so, Morgan Kennedy, I do want to push you just a little bit further. What would you do? Like, what would you focus on? What would you bring to the city council where somebody says, I don't know, I live in District 2, I can choose this person or that person? What would you work on? What would you bring to the council and say, I will fight for this particular issue?
You know, I would say probably my top priority is environmental when it comes to Chico. I am not a climate change denier. And I'm also, because I have a history of living on the ridge, and even though I moved down to Chico as a young adult, a large bulk of my family was on the ridge when the campfire hit. And I am a firm believer that Chico is next in line. We like to think that, you know, something that devastating couldn't happen here because we have a different terrain, that we're in the valley. But I think I really see a lot of problem areas around town where, yeah, maybe the whole town wouldn't be lost in, you know, an 11-hour period like the campfire. But even one house lost to fire that is preventable is too many houses lost to a fire. I really want us as a city to adapt to our current climate conditions and become an example of showing the rest of our community how you prepare for those sorts of things, how you invest back into your city and keep your residents safe from environmental disasters. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about public safety on the right. But public safety to them only means the police. They just want to give more funding to the police. Whereas I'm coming from a different perspective where I believe that public safety means a lot of things. To me, fire preparedness means public safety. People being able to ride their bicycles down the street and not get hit by a car is public safety. People having a place to go instead of just languishing on the streets is public safety. There's a lot of other issues that are not currently being looked at by our city council that really need some more attention.
Morgan Kennedy, candidate to represent District 2 on the Chico City Council. Where can people find out more about your views and your campaign?
People can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Kennedy for District 2. I also have a website, which is www.KennedyForDistrict2.com. And I also am on Act Blue under Kennedy for District 2, if anybody would like to make a donation. We are really about to ramp up our campaign in terms of fundraising and canvassing. And I would like the admission to be involved in the political process for people locally as low as possible, meaning you don't need to have a bunch of money to get involved or to learn how things work and to be on the inside. If you have nothing, I would love to hear from you. I would love to get to know you, hear what issues are important to you, and show you how to volunteer, even if you've never had any experience. So that's very important for me, to keep in constant contact with the people in my district and the people outside of my district and hear what's important to them.
Morgan Kennedy, this is an important race coming up, and so I do hope that you'll come back on to The Real Issue through the course of this election season and continue to share your views and your positions, and be good to talk with you again soon.
That was Morgan Kennedy, candidate to represent Chico's District 2 on the Chico City Council. This has been The Real Issue, which is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFAR supporters and by Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar uses products from local farms and ranches to support community agriculture. Open every day for lunch and dinner with curbside pickup at 2359 at the Esplanade in Chico. For details, find Farmstar Pizza on Facebook and at farmstarpizza.com. Up next is Faith and Common Ground.
Pagan priestess have in common? A lot more than you think. Come join hosts Jesse Kearns and Amber St. Clair for Faith and Common Ground, where we invite you to our radical hospitality table to explore the intersection of faith and public life. Faith and Common Ground airs every other Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock, following The Real Issue right here on KZFR 90.1 FM, people-powered community radio.
Faith and Common Ground is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Mount Shasta Spring Water Company, serving the community for over two decades with natural spring water bottled at the base of Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta Spring Water is available for home and office delivery at 1-800-922-6227.
Christians and our pagans sat together at the table, finding faith and common ground the best that they were able. Just before the meal was served, hands were held and prayers were said, sending hope for peace on earth to all their gods and goddesses.
Welcome to the Radical Hospitality Table, otherwise known as Faith and Common Ground, here on KZFR. I'm your host, Jesse Kearns.
And I'm your co-host, Amber French St. Clair.
And we are on week two of a series that we're doing about what people don't get about my faith tradition or religion or however you want to frame it. We've heard so many things about people who say, you know, I get tired of people saying that all Christians, Muslims, Hindus, whatever, believe this. Mm-hmm. And personally, I get tired of having to tell people, well, I am a Christian, but I'm just not that kind of Christian, mm-hmm. because of the assumptions that people make. And so last week, we interviewed Amber and talked about what it means to be a pagan in the Amber world.
And now it's your turn.
It's my turn now. So,
what's it mean to be a Christian in Jesse's world?
Yeah. And I suppose since you defined what paganism is last week, I should at least give a little definition of what I believe, at least what my framework for Christianity is this week, and that is any person who has decided to follow or become more like Jesus.
I like
and,
that.
You know, we've got then you can go into, okay, we're talking Jesus of Nazareth, we're talking Jesus the cosmic Christ, da 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 da. Let's just hold it at somebody who wants to become a disciple of Jesus.
All right.
And let you figure that out. So hit me, baby.
So Jesse.
Yeah.
I heard that all Christians are right wing fundamentalists, gun toting. Beeps.
Okay, we're going to beep that. You're going to do self beeps this week. Okay, that is interesting because, again, there are as many kinds of Christian individuals or as many kind of traditions as there are that you can imagine. And I'm not saying that that is something that, you know, the media has kind of painted that picture lately. And there are some out there.
There are.
Personally, you know, here's something interesting. Am I a gun toter? I am a firearm owner, and I'm pretty darn good shot.
Nice.
But that does not mean that I'm out misinterpreting what the Second Amendment means and trying to stockpile a bunch of weapons to be ready for when the government tries to come and take them away from me.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, all Christians are not gun-toting, you know, right-wing folks like that. There are quite a few people who are middle-of-the-line people, I guess, on a political spectrum. There are people who are very committed to peace because they believe that one of Jesus's mission imperatives is to bring peace and unity into the world. Mm-hmm. And so folks like Quakers, they do not believe in carrying any kind of firearm whatsoever. And they are a nonviolent people. They are committed to nonviolence. Again, you know, sometimes we, as the public, are left to the devices of the media, mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a right-wing crazy person
it does,
right there.
Right.
But we are subjected to the bias that is often portrayed in the media of what Christians are. I know one of the things that upsets me to no end is the Westboro Baptist Church.
Mm.
The founder of that, who has passed away, but his descendants are trying their very best. Fred Phelps's family is trying their very best to carry on that tradition, not so successfully.
Are those the ones that like protest gay people's funerals and stuff?
Yes. Not only do they protest gay people's funerals, but they protest anybody who's in the military.
What?
Funeral. I know, because they believe that they are you know, promoting a agenda that is against God, and that the military is somehow complicit with the world, the evil in the world as it is. And so, yeah, they and they're the ones that, and I think I can say this on air, that carry the signs that say God hates fags.
Wow.
Which I know. I remember one time when I was living in Lynchburg, Virginia, and you've got to understand, Lynchburg is kind of a hotbed of ultra-conservative Christianity.
You know, the name kind of clued me in just a little bit.
See, it was named for John Lynch, the explorer. Had nothing to do with lynching. Why? I don't think any lynchings ever happened in Lynchburg, Virginia.
That sounds like sarcasm, but okay.
Okay. So it is a hotbed.